some freebies here. That's from Kids Ministry magazines. And if you're not aware of Kids Matter, really this is a wonderful magazine with lots of great ideas. And so they're maybe a little out of date, but within this past year or in the last 10 to 12 months. So if you want to take one of each and you want some, you are free to have them. As I said, I think there's a lot of excellent articles in here and things that might be addressing some issues that you're dealing with within your own ministry. Also, I just wanted to make you aware that Shannon Rains, if you were not here yesterday, we have a brand new book out called Along the Way. It's Conversations About Children and Faith, and it's just different chapters on different aspects about children in ministry or in their home or in church. And Shannon has a chapter in here, our speaker today. So you can go down to the bookstore, or I think some of the sellers upstairs are selling if you have an interest. A lot of different chapters. Holly Allen.
Jeff Childers presents next.
Jeff Childers, who presents next. Suzette Annette, Dan Pemberton, just some of our very respected Christian educators that we have in our ministry. But I am really happy to introduce to you Shannon Rains, who I've known for a few years, maybe more from a distance than anything. But she has been the children and family minister, and she still is temporarily at the Kingwood Church of Christ in the Houston area for the past 11 years. But she has just accepted a position as a professor of children's ministry at Lubbock Christian University. And so that's a very exciting and challenging time for her right now. She's also the director of the TABLE, which is a conference that's now in its third or fourth year. And it's a conference that takes place for children's ministers in the Churches of Christ. And this next year, again, it's going to be at the North Davis Church in Arlington, September 25th through 27th. And what's really great about this is that I didn't get to participate this past year, but they come together as children's ministers from all over and really kind of set the tone so that you feel like you've walked away and that you've been heard and can share concerns and challenges and exciting things that are happening in your ministry. So if you want more information on that, feel free to ask Shannon or myself again on that. So she is somewhat of a founder with a group of children's ministers for that. She has a lovely husband, David, and her daughter, River, and son, Reese, 7. And so it is, again, a big transition for them as they move from Houston to Lubbock. Wow. I did ask, I'm asking each day the speakers to share with it what is a joy that children's ministry brings to you. And she said it has been something that she has been doing with her children for a while, and it's called the Contemplative Prayer Class with 3rd through 5th grade. And she says to sit with them in silence, to watch them reflect on their lives through God's love, and to have them name the work of the Spirit in their lives, which more could anyone ask for to bring them joy. And so she has seen an impact that has made on the children at her place of fellowship and faith community. So may the Lord be with you. May He give you that yes. Calming mind. She says she's kind of all over the place today, that calming mind. But at the same time, may we hear words from her that will give us a nugget of truth and something exciting to take back with us to our home. So we are very delighted that you're here.
Thank you, Marty. About the contemplative practices class that I do on Wednesday nights, that it actually grew out of a presentation I heard Suzette Annette and Dan Pemberton do a few years ago at Children's Spirituality Conference. And they have a chapter in here that talks a little bit about what they've been doing in their class. And I've taken it and just made it my own. And so I'll be presenting on that as a workshop at the Children's Spirituality Conference this next year, which is in June at David Lipscomb. So if you have interest in what that looks like, if you come to the conference, you can hear about it, or wait till just after the conference and I'll send you notes or whatever. But it has been such a blessing to have that quiet space for our children just to slow down and be with God. Uh-oh, so now I have to figure out how to turn this back on because, of course, it timed out. Or I hit the wrong button. That's what happened. Button. Play. Yes. Listen to instructions well. Okay, so children in not so perfect world. The way that this whole chapter came about, it's, Marty got me into it, actually. She passed my name on or something, and I thought, oh, that'd be easy. That sounds like fun to write on. And I found out it was really hard, but it was a big blessing. But it was a spiritual journey for me to write on this topic. It was a spiritual journey for my personal growth, I think, as well as my spiritual growth. And so it's been a blessing to me after I got through all that hard stuff. But one of the things I found very quickly that made it very difficult is when I started doing research articles and looking those up, there wasn't a whole lot out there that had been really written about what happens when we bring children into a missions context and to their spiritual formation. There's been some written, but a lot of it was popular literature kinds of things. And I'm sure I could have gone into some secular things, but then I wouldn't have seen the spiritual formation side that I was looking for. So it made it really fun to research. I think there's people out there that has different experiences that would take it to a whole new level than what I probably took it to. And so towards the end of this presentation, you guys may have some of those experiences, and I would love to hear from them, from you, what those experiences are. You know, feel free to push back or add or say, have you thought about, because together we can create spiritual spaces for our children that more completely forms them. So I want you guys, if you have your Bibles with you, you can turn to Luke chapter 7. And if not, it's okay. I'll read this to you. Luke chapter 7, 18. John's disciples informed him about all these things. John called two of his disciples and sent them to the Lord. They were to ask him, "Are you the one who is coming, or should we look for someone else?" When they reached Jesus, they said, "John the Baptist sent us to you." He asks, "Are you the one who is coming, or should we look for someone else?" Right then, Jesus healed many of their diseases, illnesses, and evil spirits, and he gave sight to a number of blind people. Then he replied to John's disciples, "Go, report to John what you have seen and heard. Those who were blind are able to see. Those who were crippled now walk. Those people with skin diseases are cleansed. Those who are deaf now hear. Those who were dead are raised up. And good news is preached to the poor. Happy is anyone who doesn't stumble along the way because of me." So, in this passage, what's Jesus up to? That's a question for you guys. What's happening here? Luke 7.
What verse is
that? 18.
I'm having a hard time finding it.
Jesus is doing lots of good things.
Jesus is doing lots of good things. And what types of good things is he doing?
He's healing.
He's healing. He's stepping into pain, suffering. And then what result comes from that? After he heals, what else is being done? Says those who were dead are raised up, and good news is preached to the poor. See, until I started working on this, I don't know if I realized how often it is that Jesus stepped into pain and suffering and then taught good news. Probably because our Church of Christ paradigm tells us something a little different. We tell everybody the good news, and then we're like, "Here, take our good news, take our good news. Learn all about, you know, go get baptized, all that stuff. Good stuff. We need to be studying scriptures with people." But we don't step into their pain and suffering and befriend them first. And we see that all throughout Scripture where Jesus is doing that. And a lot of the theme of this lectureship has been stepping into the lives of those who are marginalized. And so, you know, our question needs to be, do we teach children or do we allow children to step into the lives of those who are marginalized? Do we give them those opportunities? Is this spiritually formative for children when we do that? And so I'm going to set up a few arguments here that hopefully will resonate with you to some extent. But I want to go through a couple assumptions first. First, I'm assuming that children are kingdom bearers. And I'm saying these as assumptions, as in 45 minutes, I cannot get into all the details that would support why I'm basing my lesson off of these assumptions. So I'm going with children are kingdom bearers. That means if they're made in the image of God. Dr. Bonner's chapter, and along the way, chapter 3, I think, they're made in the image of God. They have spiritual status. They have spiritual agency. They have something to share. If you're made in the image of God and you have spiritual agency, then you're a kingdom bearer. Children have spiritual giftedness. So all of our children, they're not little children and waiting for the time that they have the leadership skills or the giftedness to serve others. They're already serving. Even our little babies, our little 2 and 3 year olds, when they look up at you and they give you a big old hug and accept you unconditionally, they're serving. They're showing the love of Christ. So children have spiritual giftedness. And then children have the ability for compassionate service and proclamation. My daughter is 13, and she has, since she was itty bitty, has had this sense of justice that just does not stop. And it's kind of annoying to me sometimes, even though it's a God-given sense of justice, because it's everything. She points out everything to me that's wrong with the world. It's like, Mom, that person was bullying this person. Mom, that person's hungry and should have food. Mom, and I'm like, I can't fix these things. I want to. But she sees them. She has those God eyes that allows her to see those things. I don't have that mercy spiritual giftedness in me. I don't see those things. Somebody has to almost hit me upside the head. It's like, that person's hungry, give that person food. And that person's thirsty, give them some water. I'm like, oh, yes, I get it now. Because that's just not my spiritual giftedness. But she has that, and she's had it all along. She can call out to those of us around her. She calls out to me, Mom, you've got to stop. You've got to help. That's that spiritual giftedness and spiritual agency. So this chapter is framed around an experience that we had as a family. I'm sure you recognize these pictures, or this picture that's up there. This is Plaza Towers Elementary. I'm going to kind of do like a missions report for you guys. So don't tune me out like you might be tempted to on a Sunday morning when the missionary from some other place gets up there and you're like, I don't know if I care. Try to hang with me. This is pretty cool. This is a mission trip that our church family went on after the tornado went through Oklahoma. And so we took kids of all ages, children, teens, adults, grandparents. We were all there. I think our youngest was 3. And this really begins on the day of the tornado, May 20th, 2013. I know exactly what I was doing. I was sitting on my couch at home in Houston, Texas. We have family in Oklahoma. I have a best friend whose parents live in this city where this happened. And so I'm sitting there. I'm starting to see on my news feed, pray about the tornado. There's a tornado in Oklahoma, you know, and they just kept posting it. And I was like, what is going on? And, sweet little baby. And I started looking at the news and realized how serious the situation was. And I texted my friend who I knew was at school. She's a school teacher. And I said, you need to call your parents right now and make sure they're okay. I know you haven't seen the news yet. And I left and went to get my kids. It was right at time for pickup, but I had that mom sense of, I'm watching this happen. These shots first come in, and I'm like, that mom sense of, yes, I understand this is 300 miles away. I'm still going to go get my babies from school now. I just need to hug them because somebody's not able to hug their baby right now. And so that's kind of how it started for me. My daughter found out pretty quickly that it happened. We don't watch the news in our house, especially with our children. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But she came home, I think, the very next day and was telling me about it. Or we prayed about it that day, maybe. And so when the opportunity came in July to go on a disaster relief trip there, this is our church family that went. We slept on floors. We went out into the community.
We worked hard. This is River right here. I'm back there in that awesome pink hat. You don't try to look cute on a mission trip, right? You just make it through, especially in Oklahoma where it's like 125 million degrees. And this is one of River's best friends. They were in fourth grade, I think, this year. And so we're out in the country, we're picking up debris, because in the cities they have services to come do that, but out in the country the county couldn't always afford to do it, so a lot of people in the county was still suffering, still trying to get through all that cleanup process. And then on the evening of July 4th, we took them over to Plaza Towers Elementary. And I had been dreading this moment, because I knew that this moment, so when we had to talk about the ultimate destruction there, and the children that died, and the teachers that tried to save the children. And I wasn't really sure how to talk to these girls about that, although they knew it had happened. But, you know, just to process it. So we get out of our bus, and this is what you see when you get up there at that time. These are all t-shirts from the different organizations that had come in to serve in that community. And so they would hang their t-shirts and sign it. So you couldn't really see what was behind the t-shirts at first. And so the girls just got off, and they knew that we were there at the site. But when the t-shirts would blow and part, this is what you could see. The crosses that was set as a memory to the teacher and the children. You can see their chairs as part of that memory. So what do you say to children when you see that? There's a lot of times that we don't have the words for pain and suffering. And images like this meet children with silence. And silence is a good thing, especially from somebody that's studying contemplative practices. I can tell you silence is a wonderful thing for our children. Silence is not a good thing when they need to process. Silence is not a good thing if we're not helping them have a theology of what it means to serve God in the middle of a broken world, where sin exists, where natural disasters exist, because how are they going to make sense of those things if we can't even talk to them about it? So when our girls saw this, of course they were silent in respect for the situation, and they kind of just knew that this was a time to be quiet. But later we had to step into that, and we had to strike up conversations that would help them as they work through what they experienced. Because when we encounter pain and suffering, this is what our kids often hear from us. They hear silence. They might hear redirection. Oh, let's not talk about that right now. We'll talk about that later. There's a man under the bridge. Well, let's not talk about that man right now. We'll talk about him later. Which we all are parents, right? For the most part in this room, we know what "we'll talk about that later" means. Usually that means, at least at my house, is please forget that you ever asked that question so I don't have to deal with it. And then if they do ask it again, then I have to deal with it. So I have to be careful with that. We want to shelter them. We want their worlds to be as perfect as possible, right? Part of our primary goal as parents is to have kids that have these wonderful experiences and that look back on their childhood as happy and joyous. And so we want to shelter them, or we get uncomfortable. You know, we can all think about not necessarily pain and suffering, but the sex talk, you get all uncomfortable. The why is that person pregnant and not married? We get all uncomfortable. So much that we have to deal with head on and say, this is how God is in these people's lives as they're living life. Or we have idealistic attitudes. You're right, honey, that's a horrible situation. Let's go write out a check. But writing out a check doesn't, it's nice, it's great, it's giving our resources. We need to submit our resources to God. But that's not shaking hearts either. Stepping into it is shaking hearts. What other ways do you think that we avoid encountering pain and suffering with our children? Do you have any other thoughts? Yes?
I think we sometimes just give those kind of cliche answers. Or we answer questions that we really don't know the answers to.
Oh, yes. It's okay to say, I don't know. I don't know. Let's pray about that. That's not an avoidance. That's being honest.
That everything happens for a reason.
Oh, you know, right. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else like to add one? A couple years ago, I was up at LCU, and they had one of the researchers from Sticky Faith in, not Cara Powell, but one of her primary researchers, to do a Sticky Faith conference. And they said that one of the reasons that first-year college students check their faith at the door is because they cannot reconcile suffering with their faith. How can God allow these atrocities to happen? And they get to college, they're no longer sheltered, which they probably weren't in high school either, but now they don't even have mom and dad there, they may not have their original church family, they have not been taught to work through it, they have not been shaped spiritually, and they don't know how to deal with it. So if God is all-powerful and it's going to allow this to happen, I'm done. Or he must not exist. And they check their faith at the door. So helping our kids understand and step into pain and suffering in these younger ages builds strong faith for the future. And there's a reality that our kids know way more than we think they do anyway. We don't watch the news in my house. I don't even turn on the news. It's just depressing, and they're going to find the worst thing ever to put on there. And really, if they quit putting all the really horrible things on there, I would kind of wonder if people would do as many dumb things in the world and broken things in the world as they do. It's like, are we just putting the idea in people's heads all the time? But, you know, I read on the news apps. I keep up with world events. I don't want to cut myself off. But for the kids, I don't want them having those images in their heads. So one thing to read it in black and white is even worse to see it. And so I try to make sure we sit down and talk about things that I know is going to come up at school or at church. And then we talk about local events. But there's been quite a few times that even though I try to be proactive, my kids have come home and told me about something before I ever had a chance to talk to them. A few of those, a major hurricane bearing down on Houston when my daughter was in kindergarten. That was the first time any of us had experienced hurricane. I was trying not to freak out. I didn't want her to freak out. It was 7 days out. Because, you know, hurricanes, unlike tornadoes, they can predict forever. And it seems like it's like, oh, we've been preparing for 2 weeks. And so it was like 7 days out. And she was in private school. And her first grade teacher got up and was like, there's a hurricane coming. It's awful. We got to do all this stuff. We got to pray. We got to evacuate. And she came home and she was just in tears. I'm like, honey, it's 7 days out and there's like 15 different directions it could go before it comes straight up into Houston, which it did. And we evacuated right after and we're all fine. But she was pretty freaked out over that. The shooting that happened, the Sandy Hook shooting, before I had a chance to talk to her about it. I think it happened one night. I sent her to school the next night. I knew I should have talked to her that night, but I was trying to get my mind around how to even do that. She came home the next day. Her teachers had told her all about it. Really? Did we need to do that right then? But I can't control those things. That's where, as a parent, I have to be more proactive. But there's some others. The Syrian refugee crisis. That's her most recent one that she came in and was like, Mom, I don't understand. And because they had been watching it on CNN, at her school. That's when I found out they watched CNN at her school. Like, I had no idea. And she was telling me all about these refugees, and we need to do something about this, and because, you know, she has this heart of mercy and justice, so that's an okay thing. But, you know, I would have talked to her more about that had I known. So, you know, we can't give our kids answers, like you said. We can't just say, everything happens for a reason. Sometimes I don't know doesn't work. So I think what I realized as I was working on this chapter is maybe I didn't have a very strong theology of pain and suffering either. Maybe I hadn't dealt with why does this happen in our world. So Romans 8:18-27, I love this verse. It was first pointed out to me when I was going through a very, very rough time with a friend who was in the midst of a addiction that still has claim on her life 6 years later. And I had prayed about it and done everything I knew to do. And a friend of mine texted me this verse. And I was like, yep, that's what I needed. Because what it says is, in the same way, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We do not know what we ought to pray for. But the Spirit himself intercedes for us through wordless groans. And he who searches our hearts knows the minds of the Spirit. Because the Spirit intercedes for people, for God's people, in accordance to God's will. bad things happen because sin exists in the world. Bad things happen because the kingdom is not fully restored yet, as it will be someday. We're in the process of. We can be kingdom bearers. We can help with that. We're part of God's plan for it. But his plan is to bring that into perfect fruition at some point. But until that time, he's given us the Spirit. So what if when our kids encounter pain and suffering, we don't know what to say? We say, you know what? God already knew there was going to be days that we didn't have the answer for you, and he gave us the Spirit. And you don't even have to have words when you pray. And that was a good Church of Christ teaching for me to break in my life. I don't even have to know what to say because God already knows that. And so sometimes it's just sitting and being quiet with that situation on our hearts and realizing the Spirit is already saying and interceding and doing what the Spirit does best. So what if we say, what if we release our kids to God's power in that way? Make sense? So Stevenson Beckwith says, whether packing bag lunches, tending a community garden, are making hygiene kits for hurricane victims, children make meaning about following Jesus by rolling up their sleeves and getting their hands dirty. They learn about justice seeking by living in ways that help to repair the world. But what happens when churches keep their doors locked and don't let children get out into the neighborhood because they are afraid that something might happen to their kids? These fears are legitimate. We want our children to be safe. But the truth is that walking in the way of Jesus means taking some risks. Being a disciple means going into the world and entering into situations that others would probably choose to avoid. And that is risky. But it's also risky to bubble wrap children and avoid exposing them to any world that isn't first sprayed with disinfectant. Think about how much our children encounter by middle school, by high school, when we launch them. If we're not intentional in the younger years, walking alongside them, they won't have the spiritual formation, the words, the language, the attitudes to make meaning of those things in a God-appropriated way. We all make meaning, right? But we need to help them see that through God's lenses, through his eyes, through God's heart. From Sticky Faith, justice will be stickier when it hits kids close to home. It needs to be in their home, literally, as we, as parents, exemplify, encourage, and actually participate with our kids in righting wrongs around them. It needs to hit close to home thematically as we help our kids understand how particular injustices relate to their lives. It needs to hit home personally as we expose our kids to actual people who have been oppressed, thereby giving injustice a face and a name. And justice ministry needs to hit home relationally as we help our kids serve others in partnership with their friends. I think one of the things I start to take away from all of this is that we can't just have a service project here and there to teach our kids about compassion or to help them enter into God's compassion. It has to become a way of life. And for someone like me, that kind of mercy thinking, spiritual giftedness is not high, doesn't flow naturally out of me. That doesn't happen often in my home. I'm not the one that thinks, oh, the person next door is sick, I should take some chicken noodle soup. Because first, I think kitchens are overrated anyway. And I just don't jump there. But I have a daughter who does. What if I stop and listen to her more? What if I let her bear the kingdom and I come along beside? We have to do this as families, and we have to do it as church. So you've heard me say it, children are kingdom bearers. We must join the children on the spiritual journey. So here's three practical ways to do that. First, contemplative practices. What I write about in the book chapter is a process called Journey In and Journey Out. journey in is when you take time to be with your children with God. When you pray for those things that they might want to step into. When you allow the Spirit to put things on their heart. Instead of us taking the service project to them and saying, here's how we're going to serve, we make it possible for them to come to us with the things God's put on their heart, and we help them make those things happen. We come alongside them instead of them coming alongside us. And you'll be amazed at what ideas your kids will come up with when you take time to pray and listen and teach them discernment. Because they'll come up with a few ideas that you're like, yes, I would love to do that. We need to win the lottery first. And, you know, and God can make anything happen. Not saying that he won't, but we also can use some of our wisdom as adults to say, why don't we start a little bit smaller? Or what about if we kind of went at it this way? And show them how we discern. How do we make a choice between four different missionaries that we need to send money to? Missions teams have to do it all the time. So what if we bring them into that process, and after prayer, conversation, discernment, we make those choices. And then we journey outward. We go out into the community, we do our service project, we collect our money, whatever it is that we've chosen to do, and we do that. And then we come back in and we journey inward again. What is it, God, that we're going to take away from this experience? What do you have for us now? What is it that you've done within me that's changed me through this experience? And to allow the kids to express those things. See, often we do service projects, kind of like the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts do service projects. They're great service projects, wonderful organizations that really help teach our kids to see the people around them. But if we're not connecting it to the heart of Christ and to bearing the kingdom when we're doing ministry, then we're not doing anything different than the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts. We're here for a different purpose. We have a different end in mind. And so we need to help our children see that natural flow. And it is hard. Because as I wrote this chapter, and I was like, oh, I'm writing this and I'm not doing it. And trying to go back and reorganize is hard. It's hard to change those rhythms in your ministry. But if you're intentional about it, it will happen. And the kids will start to expect it. A second idea is we need to understand our role as mentors to young apprentices on the journey. We're not here to teach children over them. We're not here to tell them what to do as much. We are adults. We do need to give them guidelines and boundaries. And we're here to journey with them. As parents, we're journeying with our children. As teachers, we're journeying with those that are in our ministry. And that implies a relationship and the ability to listen and the ability to bring them along whenever we go on trips and let them serve beside us, even though it's harder and it's messier and it's probably going to use up some resources we don't want to use up. And like my kids being here at Pepperdine with me this week, it means I get a whole lot less sleep, less time with my friends, and my head's kind of spinning right now. But they saw Ruby Bridges last night. I mean, my daughter had her picture with Ruby Bridges and then heard that story. That's spiritually formative. And so that, as we're ministering to the children in our ministries, what are we doing to be that mentor? And Ruby talked about it all through her lecture, being a mentor to these children. That gives her hope when she looks into their eyes for a different future. A woman that's been through so much and that could have a completely different outlook on life. And she's so positive. I don't know if I've ever been as touched by a speech as I was last night. And then always reflect with your children. Don't cut that part out. And it's really easy to cut it out. When we take our kids down to Impact, it's an inner city church in Houston. And we fill up the food pantry. And we're super, super tired after carrying hundreds of pounds of food in and putting on the pantry with 25 kids that are bouncing off the walls that just want their ice cream. And it's super easy to not stop and reflect. Why did we do this? What difference is it going to make? How are we serving God in the choices that we just made? How is Impact serving God? What else can we do for them? And that's hard to do that every time. But that's the practical step number three that we can do. So this is kind of a summary of those three steps. And we have, 7 minutes? We have 1:15?
2:15.
2:15? That's right, we started at 1:30. Okay, so let's just converse. How many of you have thought about or tried to use prayer or contemplative practices with the children in your ministry or your homes to help them identify ways that they can join God in bringing the kingdom to bear? I want to hear about that. Or if you have questions about what that looks like, you can ask me what we've tried, and I can tell you we're not perfect because I'm on a journey also.
We have started doing that on Wednesday nights, and it's been really amazing. My husband's the executive minister, and he was like, okay, children's ministry is growing Wednesday night. We're probably the only church where Wednesday night is booming. And a lot of it is because of our children's ministry. The children are insisting that they're there, and we call it Soul Wednesdays. And they rotate through a couple of things, but twice each, all the kids do a Soul Wednesday experience. And it is contemplative, and we kind of try to ask the Holy Spirit to guide it, so it's not our, and he's doing some pretty cool stuff, but a lot of times just praying over what you want that to be, and we want it to mesh with our curriculum, but sometimes God's got other ideas, you know, so.
And that's what we do.
Yeah, they just do prayer flags. Anyway, they just do some kind of hippie stuff, but it's really, it's really cool, and they love it, and it is a quieter, more calming experience too, which I think is really cool. The other thing we do sometimes on Wednesday, well, they do this twice, is a service night. And it ties into our curriculum. We have a children's offering, and we really started taking what those kids take that money for and tying that into a service project. So we talk about all month, okay, the money you're collecting in worship is going towards this project. And like right now, our church is real involved with Teen Challenge, and our men are studying on Wednesday nights, and we've had like 25 baptisms in the last 2 months. I mean, huge things God's doing. And we're fixing to study Jacob. And we have some people whose lives have been transformed. They're going to come speak to our elementary kids about what their experience has been. Because those kids are seeing it. You know, they're seeing those baptisms, and they're seeing God at work. And so one of our elders is bringing in some of the guys from Teen Challenge that have been baptized and just not deep, you know, kind of probably not going into their deep addiction issues or whatever, but the thought that God is doing, what he did in these Bible stories, he still does. And I think that's so important, is making God current in your mind. You know, it's not just a story about God changing Jacob and turning him, you know, but he's still in that business, and it's happening right here.
Wonderful. I love that. We do every summer, this made me think about that, we do summer service and the summer mission. We alternate it every summer. So we don't do ours all year, but we spend that 13 weeks. And summer service is local things that we can do. It might be there in the church, it might be for our families or shut-ins. Every week is a different service project, so, you know, 13 different things that we can go do. We color placemats that go to the prison ministry. If any of y'all have a Kairos ministry, that's something that's kids can always do for them. And then summer missions, I try to find as many of our members that has short-term or long-term mission experience to come in and talk about the country they went to. What is it like? What's the culture like? You know, do people worship God there? Do they worship a different God? You know, what's it like to be in a country where people don't worship the one true God? How do you talk to people about God in those situations? And they love it. So, they love our contemplative practices class on Wednesday nights that's during the school year. But last week I asked them, I said, okay, we could either keep going with this in the summer, or you guys can have your summers of missions and we'll take a break and we'll come back to it in the fall. And they immediately was like, no, we want summer of missions, you know, let's do that. And they love their Wednesday night class. It has nothing to do, I mean, because they call me and tell me, and their first question is, when they found out I was leaving, one of their first questions is, are we still going to have our special class? Yes, you will. You know, my co-teacher will lead it for you. And but that's a simple way. And I love you. You do it year-round by dedicating some Wednesday nights. We do it year-round by doing, or during the summer, by dedicating the summers. Any other ideas that you would like to bring in to share with the rest of the group?
Just
question. Yes. Do you talk in the book about the, I have the book, so if you do, I don't want to ask a question that can take up the time, but about practically what those contemplative practices look like?
I think it's Susetta's chapter. You'll want
okay.
to look there.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I think she covered several. It's been a little bit since I read it. But. Okay. What about in your churches? Do you feel like you're doing any good job of being mentors to your young apprentices? Or do you feel like there's room to grow in those kinds of relationships?
There's absolutely room to grow.
Absolutely room to grow?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
We use the Orange curriculum.
Yes.
And I was out at the Orange conference last week and heard Doug Fields talk about raising up ministers. And that you look at all of the kids from the beginning as ministers, and that your goal is to, you know, graduate ministers at high school. And just in the few days of unpacking that and really thinking about that a week, I guess, you know, that's an incredible lens to view the kids
mm-hmm.
through. It's a lot like what you're talking about with your daughter and letting them choose, you know, what's on your heart for service and so much more than just us thinking for them. So I just think that lens is really interesting to look at the young apprentice, you know, kind of thing.
I love that idea of raising up our kids to be ministers. And they're already ministering, but to make that their vocation of life, professional or otherwise,
right.
to see themselves as that, not as consumers of the local church, but as servants of the kingdom. Yeah, there's a thought that left me, so that's okay. Y'all have those moments, right? Okay. Any other thoughts about mentoring and apprenticing? In the spiritual formation and children's ministry classes I teach, we talk a lot about this with intergenerational ministry. You went to Holly Allen's class, maybe. If you haven't, I can't remember if she's still speaking this week or if she's already done hers.
She spoke yesterday.
But, you know, her book is a great place to go. But my kids, students... And I'm going to have to learn how to go to students now after 15 years of my kids or my children. But they were blown away by this idea of intergenerational ministry and mentoring and apprenticing. And they just kept saying that some of them had those experiences in their home churches. Most of them were like, we have no idea what that would look like, but we would desire that ourselves. And so then they had fun trying to come up with what it would look like in a children's ministry. So we are right at the last minute. Any questions, or we can talk about the last question? I don't want to keep you over. So do you do reflection time with your students in your classes, after service projects, or a worship service that has a special focus? They don't always understand those. We know it's different. They're not really sure why.
I think when it comes right down to it, I think the reason why people are having such difficulty in answering is that I don't think we build into that and maybe just haven't gone that next direction. All of a sudden, you know, things are over and kids move on. But it's something for us to ponder on is how do we build that into this conversation that would make it more complete once they leave our premises.
And I think that's what this book so much is adding to the conversation. Really, y'all don't have to get it, and it's not because I have a chapter in there.
What is it called?
Along the Way. It's, I mean, I use it for textbook for my classes, but when we, in children's ministry, often we use mostly printed resources because that's quick and easy, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we have to build in these other steps because our resources miss them. So this gives you a lot of language for it and a lot of great ideas. So anyway, thank you for being here with me.
Thank you.
And thank you.